The Summit County Council meets tomorrow, 3 o'clock at the Summit County Courthouse in Colville. In the studio with a preview of the agenda, Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Before we talk about that, can we just get a quick update then with regard to Recycle Utah? I know that you had talked to me earlier just saying that we're still looking for a new place to move to.
Yeah, so I've tasked Tim Loveday and Derek Radke, who are the center of our solid waste program for the county, with really relooking at our solid waste plan, especially in the standpoint of how many recycle trucks we have going up and down the valley each day, down to Salt Lake to drop off recycling. Our last solid waste plan centered on having some type of transfer facility somewhere in the Snyderville Basin in order to reduce those number of trips, consolidate those loads, and get them on bigger trucks before they go down. And we've talked over the years with Recycle Utah about their operation and how that could fit into something bigger within the Snyderville Basin. So I think there's some opportunity there, and we are certainly looking for places to locate those types of services. So if it works out that that those things can be some synergy between our services, then we will be encouraging that.
Hmm. Is there any chance here, opportunity to maybe work with Wasatch County as well? Because theirs is getting hauled to the same place.
Certainly a possibility. I don't think Wasatch County actually has curbside recycling anymore. So they're not providing the same level of service. And I'm not exactly sure how they do that, but we will be talking to them about that because things being on the 40 corridor, if they do want to do that kind of thing in the future, or there's some benefit to them to pick up that service again, it would be natural that we would work together on that.
Okay, work session tomorrow begins at about 3 o'clock again at the county courthouse in Colville. A discussion regarding the Canyons employee housing plan, according to Pat Putt's report. The original SPA approval says the resort has to provide housing for 20% of its employees. It has to be built by thirds, a third of the housing by the time you get to 33% of the build-out, two-thirds by 66, et cetera. So where are we, or where I should say is the resort in terms of that build-out?
Well, they just within the last year tipped over the 25% mark, but that kicks in having to do that further study on what the future need for affordable housing was going to be. So when they hit that 33%, they're ready to build. An anomaly within the 1999 study that kind of established the baseline for the affordable housing had a component to it that has actually turned out to lower the requirement over the years. And it has to do with the amount of affordable housing that's being presently provided in the community. So it turned out that the numbers required were going to be lower. So the CVMA has redone that study and in conjunction with our staff, and some new numbers are going to come out that are based on that 20% number that was established back in 1999. And the proposal that the council is going to see in the new report would have the CVMA building all of that housing up front. So when they hit 33%, or even with it as early as next year, they would start building that housing. They'd build 100% of it up front instead of waiting for the build out of the development. And the number is a lot higher than what was reported to the council back in October, or late last fall when they first reported back.
Yeah, because I think we were talking about 700. Now we're talking about perhaps 900.
Yeah, somewhere upwards of 900, and that's pretty exciting to see. The willingness of the folks at the Canyons to expand that. And of course, the devil's in the details still. I think the council has an interest in really understanding that 20% number that was established back in 1999. Why did the formula that got brought forward into the further study lower the requirement, and are we centered on that 20% number? But early indications are is that we're going to see some affordable housing built very, very soon, and it's going to be a bigger number than what we were expecting in the original studies.
And all on site.
And all on site, and all right away. I mean, having it available right away is a big deal.
So what's the quid pro quo
here? So not sure that there is one yet, but as you know, The Planning Commission is considering a development agreement amendment right now for the remaster planning that TCFC and with their partners with Replay have been working on. So that's in front of the Planning Commission and eventually will be in front of the Council. As well, the TCFC has put forward a self-assessment district in front of the Council, and there's still ongoing discussions about that. Quid pro quo is probably a pretty strong thing to say about this, but there are considerations out there that the developers are also asking for.
Mm-hmm. Are they asking for more density?
Density, mm-hmm. Within the master plan, a little less parking within the master plan on site. Really, the way it's being described by them is that they want to make the resort more more walkable, more livable, a better product that they can put into the market. Now, you know, it's not up to me to determine whether that is actually the fact, but between themselves and the Planning Commission, we'll see what comes out of that.
All right. Also, a discussion on the future of septic development in Summit County. So, I mean, what is the future? I mean, do we allow new development in the basin to go on septic?
Well, you know, I don't, you know, in the basin, we haven't allowed that much development beyond what's already on septic because we have sewer available. And sewer is available practically everywhere now, unless it's incredibly challenging. But really, the purpose of this study was to provide not only to identify neighborhoods within the Snyderville Basin that we need to be concentrating on, like Lower Silver Creek, where we're running sewer right now. There are a few other neighborhoods that we need to concentrate on over the next few years in order to correct the failing septic situations. But it also provided kind of a background study in order to apply the same lessons to the east side of Summit County. So we're the east side of Summit County, where not only are we contemplating a new development code, but we know there's high water tables in certain areas. We know there's areas that are over 35% slopes. Those areas by state law have some restriction to them that we'd have to regulate. And it's not about controlling development in a sense. It's more about doing it smartly. So, you know, if conventional septic is not the smartest thing to do in a certain area, can an advanced septic system work? Can we figure out how to get sewer to those areas so that development can still occur, but that we don't affect the groundwater at the same time?
Yeah. So, I mean, what is this study going to tell us about growth in the eastern side of the county? I mean, if a new house or, let's say, a new subdivision were to apply tomorrow there.
Well, there's nothing applied to it yet, mm-hmm. so we don't have any code or any regulation around this. But it's a tool that we can use to say, is this an area that needs further study? You know, beyond just the simple perk test or a perk test during certain times of the year, in order to figure out what type of system is required. And you know, in the future, we'll since we already know there are advanced septic systems that can do more than the traditional ones that we have been permitting, those might be something that we allow.
As opposed to just requiring a sewer district.
Absolutely. Although, you know, the discussions of sewer districts in the future are also going to have to be had. I mean, as development and more dense development happens anywhere, that has to happen.
All right. Let's see. Mountain Regional asking for some budget amendments. Apparently more spending in their capital budget. What's this supposed to accomplish?
Well, they've got, you know, as with any entity that does capital projects, they always have things on their list that didn't make the original budget or budget cutoffs as their red lines go. They have got a couple of power generation, backup power generation projects that they want to do. As well as that's the main thing that they've got. And since they had some overage in some of their revenues, as they've come through their audit, their board has decided to move those projects forward.
All right. And then also a possible approval of the TZO on grading permits. Last meeting, council heard some concerns that this would be too restrictive on agricultural dirt moving activities or work by homeowners associations. So has the proposal been changed to address this?
Yeah. So at the last hearing, the council directed the attorney's office and the staff of the Community Development Department to look at two things. kind of the thresholds for the number of cubic yards that could be moved without that low impact permit. What I'm reading is that the threshold being amended is looking at somewhere between 100 and 1,000 yards as opposed to the 40 cubic yards that was the threshold. So that will be discussed on Wednesday evening, as well as the just the exemptions. So there was an agricultural exemption within the original TZO. The council wanted to strengthen the language, so the attorney's office is suggesting some things along with some other exemptions that would apply. So those were the two main areas that were that seemed to be controversial according to the council. So they will be discussing that.
All right. And then possible approval of Chapter 4 of the East County Planning Code revision. Can you briefly again review what that does?
Well, the Chapter 4 is the procedural part of the code. So how does somebody go about applying for different types of development? How do they subdivide? How do you know what happens with remainder parcels? All of those types of things, and what types of permits are required in order to develop land. This chapter has been less controversial, although it does deal with a lot of items that the eastern landowners were very concerned about along the way. One of the things that the council has concentrated on with this chapter is, you know, can families subdivide land so that their own family can build on that land or have value within that land. So, I don't know whether it'll actually get adopted this Wednesday. I think there's still a lot of discussion with edits that the council would like to make. But this is the last opportunity for the public. The public hearing is still open. So I'm sure that the council will be taking comments or will leave that open. They may close it this week and then begin their deliberation on what the final language will be.
And the more controversial Chapter 3 is not on the agenda. So when does that come up for?
Council asked for us to hold off on Chapter 3 until they were done with Chapter 4. So I think they're telling us that they want to get done with Chapter 4 within the next couple of meetings and then concentrate on Chapter 3.
All right. Any updates on Bonanza Flat?
No update on Bonanza Flat. Still the same message that the county is in there, and we're figuring out the details of the agreements between Park City and ourselves to move that money and make it available for the purchase. The only other thing I've got is that Eastern Summit County Planning Commission has three open spots. Taking applications through Tuesday, April 4th at 5 p.m. And you've got to be, since we already have two members that are that live within municipalities, you've got to be an unincorporated resident to apply.
All right, Tom, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
Well, the Park City Planning Commission meeting tomorrow night starting at 5:30 in the studio with a preview of the agenda. I have Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll get that mic on for you.
Well, good morning
here.
Anyway.
So first up, CUP to install what, a cell tower on top of the Lowell condominium's rooftop?
Yeah, this should go fairly smoothly. It's another cell phone tower there, conditional use permit. It's at the Lowell building at the base of Park City Mountain Resort. But the bigger implication for the community is we're watching this sort of proliferation of things hanging off of light poles, whether they're traffic control cameras, security cameras, small cell towers, this normal cell. Planner Ashley Scarf is actually working very hard on the policy questions of this proliferation of telecommunications devices. There's also another thing that's called densification, which is another kind of antenna system to add capacity to a cell system, and also working with Matt Castle, the city engineer. So it looks simple. This one is simple, but the bigger policy implications are coming forward.
All right. So, I mean, what other communities do? Just have lots of stuff hanging and up in the air?
No, there are some controls, and we need to make some decisions about how much stuff we're going to hang in any one location. Our code is pretty good so far about co-location of devices before allowing new locations for devices. You can see sort of a medium project there on the old Yarrow Tower where the antennas are, and then on Mark Fisher's building over above White Pine where there's a co-location box that, you know, covers up a bunch of antennas.
But it sounds like it's just based on a first-come, first-served basis, as opposed to maybe a need-based.
Yeah, it is, and there's probably no other way for us to regulate it. These companies have franchise agreements with the municipality.
Okay. Let's see, on the regular agenda, we've got a possible ratification on the Intermountain Healthcare Master Plan development. Any issues here?
No, there shouldn't be any. This is another piece of Kirsten Whetstone's very detailed and thorough work in getting these agreements in place so that we can have good history when we regulate into the future. There's no changes to their master plan right now. This is just the final documentation.
Okay, and this basically moves forward the Peace House construction?
This is a portion of that as well.
All right. Let's see. And finally, the request by Deercrest Associates, basically to suspend the requirement that Deer Hollow Road, as we've all known it as Keatley Road, to be physically disconnected at the time of development of a new project. So what is this? The staff recommendation is not to physically disconnect the road?
That's generally the staff recommendation at this point. And this, to be clear about this, the West Gate, which is the one at Queen Esther, will remain in place. The Ridge Gate, which is the one that's manned at the top of Queen Esther Ridge, where Keatley Road drops down to the east, will remain in place. And the East Gate, which is on the Deer Valley Gondola side at Jordanelle, will remain in place. There's supposed to be another disconnect when Slalom Village comes in, about halfway down between the East Gate and the West Gate. That disconnect does not exist right now, even though it is supposed to. It was removed as part of a health and safety plan for the construction of St. Regis. So in this case, we're saying that the middle gate is kind of a superfluous, why are we doing these things? There is a broader discussion about whether emergency access needs to take place and how that's negotiated. That's not part of this deal at this point. So, and lots of other ideas out there.
Well, so does Deercrest want it so that they now have a gated community or?
Well, they have a gated community now. I think there's some logistic issues about delivering service vehicles up Deer Hollow Road rather than having go through the neighborhood, for example. There are some issues about emergency services getting up to St. Regis without having to go through the neighborhood. So there's a lot of considerations on Deercrest's side to go ahead and allow that road to be open so that their neighborhood is not impacted.
All right. Pretty steep road, though, yeah?
It's a steep road. It's 10%, but we haven't had any issues. We're not aware of any transportation issues on it so far. They do a good job of taking care of it.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Not on the Planning Commission. A couple other things coming up. The Board of Adjustment tonight will meet on a variance request up on 277 McHenry. The applicant is asking for a couple of variances to the ordinance. He's got an old platted historic road going through, or road right away going through his lot. So we'll be going through that one tonight at 5 o'clock. The Planning Commission tomorrow night at 5:30. On April 12th, we'll have another Planning Commission meeting. That's when the transportation report for Treasurer is due. And then on the 30th, City Council will hear the appeal of the outdoor special event permit at the Kimball. So that's 30 March City Council for that. So our folks are busy, and we're moving things forward.
Okay. Bruce, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
It's 8:40. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, after Nzarepa announced her retirement from Recycle Utah earlier this year, the Board of Directors has now selected Carolyn Wara as the new Executive Director for the Park City Conservation Association, which does business as Recycle Utah. Both women join me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Hello. Leslie.
So congratulations to you, Carolyn. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. I moved out here 10 years ago, kind of fell in love with Park City and everything all about Park City. I moved from Minnesota, graduated from the University of Minnesota, and I got involved at Park City Mountain Resort. I was a snow reporter for Canyons for a while. I might have talked to Leslie back then. And I've been with mountains for 7 years. I graduated from Leadership Park City a couple years ago, and I was like, I got to go volunteer, be a leader in the community. And Recycle Utah was on top of my list. I try to live a very sustainable life. I try to do things green. I try to rethink how I currently do things and do things better and be an example to my friends and my acquaintances. And, you know, I'm a resource for them. Like, hey, Carolyn, how do I do this? And I'm always there to tell them, hey, maybe you should do it this way instead. So I got involved with Recycle Utah because it kind of aligned perfectly with my passion. I was on the board of directors for 2 years. I served as the secretary. And then once I found out Inza was leaving, kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for me to apply for her position and take over at Recycle Utah.
Well, again, congratulations on that. But your background's in marketing. I mean, do you have any background in recycling and trash collection and things like that? Water conservation?
Mainly from passion. Like, I watch, like, documentaries. I look up articles. I seek out this kind of information on my own automatically. And then I learned a ton from being on the board. You know, I have a really good board that I work with and working with INS these past couple of years. And the staff at the center, they're all experts in what they do. And I think that still plenty to learn. And I'm very excited to learn it all.
Yeah. So you're starting April 4th. What about you, INS? There's going to be some overlap so that you can kind of help get her feet wet here?
Well, maybe we can pull a couple of overnighters and, and get you in the game here. We're going to work that out next week.
Okay. Yeah. So you're hoping for some overlap then,
yes,
at least.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. And then what's next for you?
What's next for me?
Yeah.
I am waiting for a cause to find me. And if there's anybody out there who has causes, get in touch with me. I'm looking at my next steps. So it's going to be great fun.
Okay.
But I want to start with thanking you, Leslie, and the crew at KPCW for giving us a voice for all these years. I remember being one of the first callers at the very weird show of the Swap Show on Saturday mornings where people came here in costumes. That was a long time ago. But since then, we have been a sponsor of this Green Earth and new programming, the monthly reports with you. So thank you for giving us the opportunity to let you know what's going on, because, as you know, we always have something going on, and I'm sure Carolyn is going to continue making events happen. And as we look at the next month, and this is what I do once a month, to tell Leslie what's going on. So it's really been good. So thank you for that.
Okay. So you got coming up at the end of the month, the Meet the Producers. This is taking place at the Swanner Eco Center. Why is Recycle Utah involved in something like that?
Because growing food locally saves food miles, less CO2, more water conservation. It totally aligns with our conservation views. So we actually were the ones to start out this meeting long, long time ago. But as you know, we don't have enough space. So I'm very grateful to Swanner for taking it over. That is your time to come out to Swanner to meet the producers, know where your food comes from, and sign up for CSAs, which is very important. So you're supporting the farmers who grow your food. But that's not all. We're going to jump in April, which used to be our sustainability month with lots of events, and we have some of them still. Death by Design is the documentary that we're going to be showing at the Santee on April the 6th, 7 p.m. And who doesn't have a cell phone these days? So I read the statistic that by 2020, 5 billion people will own a mobile phone. However, there is a dark side to all of this, and this documentary discovers how it looks in Silicon Valley from and in China. So that day, we wanted to come get that information and bring the cell phones, bring the cords to the event. We're going to see to it that they get recycled properly. And I know you all have that old flip phone someplace in your drawer, so bring it out. There's a whole lot of nasty stuff in our cell phones. Earth Day is coming up, of course, on the 22nd of April. It is the 47th time that nationally we're asking you to think about the one and only planet we call home. There are special service events happening at the center. We are the Charm Center. We're not just charming, Carolyn. We are the Charm Center. And that is the Center for Hard-to-Recycle Materials. We're constantly adding things to it. We've always accepted the thermometers, but now we're going to be accepting again the inner tubes and tires and everything that comes along with our toys that we play with. Bring us the skis and poles and snowboards still. We do have our Earth Day celebration, which we have had for a number of years, and it is again a fundraising dinner at Wasatch Brew Pub on Earth Day, April 22nd. It starts at 6 until 9. There will be a silent auction, and of course the proceeds from that silent auction will fund our education programs in schools. We're in our schools right now, Parley's Park teachers. Thank you for having us. On the 27th, it's going to be our 18th annual Water Festival. That's fourth grade education for approximately 550 students. It is by invitation only, so we have a number of schools attending, and we are filled for that one. And a little heads up, on May the 6th, the Hazmat Collection event at Canyons happens again from 9 to 1 p.m. But the Summit County Landfill accepts your hazardous waste daily, so go there first.
Okay. And again, you're in at the offices through at least the 4th, huh?
I'm going to be there at least through the 1st. I thought I should quit on April Fool's Day.
Okay. All right, Carolyn, anything else you wanted to add?
No, thanks for covering all those fun events. April's a great month to celebrate this beautiful earth we call home. So
okay.
Come out for anything.
All right, again, congratulations. Inso, we'll miss you, but we'll see you around town.
Thank you.
Jewish Family Services, People's Health Clinic, and the Christian Center presenting a community event tomorrow night to help stop the help start the conversation of a person's end-of-life wishes. On the phone is a woman who will help nudge us to have that conversation with our loved ones is Kathleen Pitcher-Toby. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the event, as I mentioned, tomorrow, March 22nd, is taking place in the new community education rooms at the hospital. A light supper at 5:30. The program begins at 6 o'clock. So begin by just telling us a little bit about yourself and what the conversation project is.
Sure. My name is Kathleen, as you mentioned, and I'm a program officer with Cambia Health Foundation. And Cambia Foundation is the corporate foundation for Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Utah. And we fund all different types of work in healthcare, but our signature program is called Sojourns, and it's really dedicated to building awareness, building the workforce around palliative and end-of-life care, both in the clinical setting and also in our communities. And one of the key initiatives that we've adopted is called the Conversation Project, and it's a public awareness campaign that was first established actually in Boston by Ellen Goodman, and many of your listeners may know her. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, and I think some of her work, you know, appears in the Boston Globe, et cetera. So what she did, she had an experience with her mom at end of life that was less than desirable, less than joyful, less than a lot of things, as so many people have experienced themselves. And so what she wanted to do is really engage the community and the American public in this whole idea of having end-of-life conversations with their loved ones about what they desire most, what matters most to them at the end of life. So that's really what we're going to be doing up in Park City tomorrow night. The Conversation Project has a starter kit that I'll be working with people on and training them in, which just gives some really basic questions to start the conversation. It doesn't include, you know, every kind of question or conversation that you may want to have with your loved ones, but it gives you some starting points so that people can get past that kind of initial fear and hesitation and start having the dialogue with people that they love.
And again, if people can't be there, they can go online. There's the free starter kits I noticed online at theconversationproject.org. Also on the website, I mean, if you need a good cry, go and read some of the stories about people that they've had with their, you know, their loved ones there. But when we talk about that conversation, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, nobody, you know, we all know we're going to die, but nobody likes to talk about it.
No, absolutely. And it's interesting to see the statistics because so many people, I mean, 60% of people say that making sure their family's not burdened by the decisions is really important to them. But 56% of people have not communicated their preferences. So there's just a lot of stigma and sadness, and people anticipate. But what we really find is that when people kind of open that door and start having the conversation, it can actually bring a lot of peace to people, and it's actually a gift that you can give your family because you kind of open the door, you cross into that territory, and, you know, we try and tell people to take it easy, try and find something, even bring humor to it, so that it's not scary. People need to have the conversation. And we also tell people, Leslie, it's important to do it at any stage of life. It's not necessarily only if you have a chronic illness, but any stage of life, because as we all know, things happen, and we want to make sure that your preferences are expressed and valued and listened to by your loved ones and by your doctor.
Now, is there some special recommendation for those who may be dealing with a parent with memory issues? Because what you tend to see is a lot of confusion and somebody who changes their mind about what they want and don't want.
I know. I mean, I think that is really adds a lot of credence to the argument that you should do it the sooner the better, right? Don't wait until you're in a difficult situation. And so many people right now are dealing with dementia and Alzheimer's issues in with their loved ones. I think most every family in some way is dealing with that. So there is, if you go to the website, there's a special kit that's designed with tips and pointers just for people who are dealing with dementia in their lives. It's like a got a purple cover. And that one is free also. You could download it and look at some of the questions and think about how to broach it with the people that you love. But the sooner the better, because as we know, I mean, before there's a lot of significant memory loss, you need to have those conversations with your parents and your loved ones.
Yeah. And so these conversations are had, and then yet, and a person kind of lays out what kind of end of life experience they want, and then it can't be carried out. I mean, because I read one of the stories there on the website, and it was this daughter. It was mother wanted to stay at home, and the daughter could not make her comfortable at home and ended up moving her into kind of a hospice care. And then all of the resulting guilt from not doing what, you know, they had planned to do. Is there any help for that, you know?
Well, I think up front we have to know, you know, as the caregivers, and so many people are in caregiving situations, that you may not be able to honor the person's wishes, and it has to be okay. You're going to do the very best that you can and get support from other people in your community, you know, from hopefully the physician and the nurses and hospice workers who are so amazing, and then people maybe on the spiritual care side of your life that can give you comfort. Because you may not be able to, but the whole point is to have these conversations with the people you love so that you know, and then you're going to do your very, very best to make that happen.
All right. And what do you think somebody will get out of being there tomorrow night?
Hopefully they'll learn more about the importance of having these end-of-life conversations. I'm going to give them some local resources for tools that are available in Utah, such as how to write an advance care directive and assign a healthcare proxy. And then they'll just have some basic questions and kind of do a little bit of conversations just with people at their table setting to start and initiate that. What matters most to you at the end of life? We hope to really trigger these conversations, make it seem like a positive experience rather than something that's negative and sad and should be avoided. It should be something helpful. It should be a gift that you can give your family.
Okay. Again, Kathleen Pitcher-Toby, she'll be there at the Park City Hospital tomorrow. Again, it starts with some light supper at 5:30, the program itself beginning at 6 o'clock. You'll have things wrapped up, what, 7:30?
Oh, I think 7:30, yeah. We should be wrapped up and ready to go home.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your time.